Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today, we're delighted to be joined by Rupert Virchow, CEO of Pilbara Resources. Welcome back, Rupert.
I feel, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So, obviously, today we saw the announcement of the promising results from recent sonic core drilling at the Boland Ionic Rare Earths RE prospect, positioning it as a potential world-class source of magnet and heavy rare earths. The drilling confirmed high-grade concentrations across three mineralization zones, with significant grades and mineralization supportive of cost-effective in-situ recovery. This method is favored for its scale, cost, and environmental benefits, setting Cobra on a path to industry leadership in ionic rare earth mineralization extraction. You highlighted the exceptional province-scale potential, comparable grades, scale, and metallurgy to Brazilian projects, but with a unique geology amenable to ISR, promising to revolutionize the sector with upcoming hydrology studies and pilot testing to further demonstrate commercial viability. Sounds very exciting, Rupert.
Yes, it certainly is, Phil. I think it's always great when you put a geological concept together, and as you start to test that concept, those theories start to materialize. And that's what that news today really validates. We spent a long time trying to understand the catalysts of ionic absorption and the chemistry drivers to it. And these results really demonstrate that understanding. And fortunately for us, we're seeing those conditions and chemistry in a geological system that's amenable to the lowest cost and lowest impact form of mining, being in situ recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. So just talk us through what's next then at Boland. You've hit these high grade concentrations across these three zones of mineralization, the formations with high permeabilities amenable to ISR. But what can listeners and investors expect to hear from the sort of roadmap now from 6 to 12 months?
So what we've really focused on to really demonstrate to the market the significance of what we believe we have at Boland is demonstrating further scale. So we want to demonstrate this as being a province scale occurrence. What we've been able to do as we've understood this geological system is be able to make associations between the downhole geophysics, and we've been able to go back to historic work and map that out over a really significant regional scale. And we're talking sort of 130 square kilometres of prospective geological formation that hosts this mineralogy. And that's on the Boland prospect alone. We have a further 2,000 square kilometres of this paleo system under our land tenure, and where we believe that we'll be able to demonstrate it on a province scale over that holding. In terms of the grade concentration and its amendability to ISR, what these holes have been drilled for is they've been drilled in a configuration that would support a in-situ recovery wellfield. So instead of having to optimize a pit shell and mine down and extract this material, we've installed the wells to be able to inject an elixir in and extract it out. And what that enables, or what this wellfield will enable us to do, is an infill pilot study that we hope to materialise at the back end of obtaining the right environmental data. And we hope that that will be a time frame of sort of 16 to 18 months. So we're really fast tracking that component whilst we then look at going and verifying what recovery potentials we can get under ISR conditions. And we're doing that through ANSTO testing. Those results will be released to the market over the coming weeks as that testing progresses. And then we have further scale demonstration and validation through reanalysis of historic drilling. So we have lots of news to come to market over the coming weeks. And really, what we hope investors will see is this project starting to materialize in terms of quality and scale over a very short time period.
So, Rupert, on a scale of 1 to 100, how happy are you at these results?
Yeah, pretty happy at the moment, Kevin. I think
Video clip required, let's smile.
Let's push it quite high up. I think what's important is not always do you want narrow intervals for your mineralization, but under an in situ recovery environment, it's very important to have constrained mineralization. And what we're seeing in this geological occurrence at Boland is very constrained but high grade, and importantly enriched in heavy rare earths, this mineralization. So heavy rare earths are important because they're more valuable rare earths. So if we look at zone 3, where we've got over 50 ppm of dysprosium and terbium, we also have exceptional recoveries of those two high value rare earths within that zone. When I say exceptional recoveries, over 79% terbium and 67% dysprosium in that geological formation. So what's important there is it's very low cost. We're talking about acidities that are the same as orange juice. So we're not using a lot of acid to be able to extract those rare earths out. So low cost for high value return for a very favorable basket for a future rare earth carbonate.
So if you, let's take one of the zones and just talk people through it so we can understand, because there's a lot of technical data in that sort of scenario. So if I go to zone one in the RNS, it says 3.1 meters at 1,007 parts per million, okay? Total rare oxides. So tell us first, what does that mean?
Okay, so rare TREO, or total rare earth oxides, represents the 15 lanthanides that are rare earths. What we have is we have interbedded clant sands and clays that are confined within an aquifer zone, which is an ancient paleochannel. That upper zone is constrained to a player clay that is interbedded with permeable sands, and that occurs from a depth of around 12 meters. The next zone is directly below it, and the third zone is a little deeper. What's important from in situ recovery is you actually mine your deepest zone first. So you drill a hole, you screen the deepest zone, and then you work back up through your mineralized zones that sit above it. So it's a backward mining process. But for context, that well field has around 120 meters of drilling, and it's much cheaper to put 120 meters of drilling in and not have to move a single ton of material.
Okay. So if we carry on going through this, were ND203 plus PR6011 totals 212 parts per million, and then DY203 and TB203 totals 23.5 parts per million. These are the magnetic rare earth oxides, which is really what you're after, I presume. This is where the money is.
That's correct, Kevin.
In terms of those things.
So those rare earths really represent a significant portion of the basket value. Likewise, for the heavy rare earths. And what we're seeing is very good endowments of those magnetic and heavy rare earths within those three zones. But the greatest enrichment of heavies and highest grades actually occurs in that first zone of mining, which is zone 3, which occurs in a deeper horizon. And what we have done or announced today is we've announced some permeability results based on particle sizing fraction analyses that correlate with zone 3. And what those results are showing us is we've got great permeabilities or transmissivities for potentially pumping fluids through to be able to extract those rare earths out.
So this is where you said that by pumping the fluid through, and as you said, it's an acid as strong as an orange juice, you pump those through, and in this particular case, it's in zone 3, which is the lowest of the three. And that has then meant that this has released the rare earths. It's released both the magnetic rare earth oxides and the heavy rare earth oxides to the tune of 79% of what is there. Am I reading this right?
Of our terbium, and then dysprosium 67%. Yes, correct.
Okay. And you expect then, based on the geology of what you've seen, do you expect that these narrow bands of zone 1, zone 2, zone 3 to be continual for a long period of time, or not time, a long distance? Or is it going to be fine in a bit here, a bit there?
That's correct, Kevin. I think what's important is these systems are regionally extensive, and the geophysics that we've been able to assess against the geology and the mineralization, we've been able to define over a very broad area, and we've subsequently modelled that out over 130 square kilometres. So that's a significant region of geological continuity that we expect or hope to see that mineralisation occurring over. So that's a very positive outcome that we'll be able to materialise into results through reanalysing those historic holes.
Well, that is quite a serious area. I see that you had 139 million square metres, which I presume is 139,000 kilometres, square kilometres.
130 square kilometres, 39 square kilometres, correct.
Yeah. So what are people going to receive from you to then use in these magnetics rare earths or the heavy metal rare earths?
So our first step, Kevin, is to produce a rare earth carbonate. A carbonate is effectively a salt that is a mixed rare earth carbonate, so it contains all of those 15 lanthanides. What's important is, based on the ratios of your mineralization in the ground, reflects your overall product value in that carbonate. Fortunately for us, we get higher recoveries of the heavy rare earths, which are your valuable rare earths, and what we do are lesser valued rare earths, such as cerium. So overall, it means that we have a well-weighted, or potentially, we haven't produced a product yet. We certainly anticipate to, on the back end of our bench scale test work that we have underway at ANSTO. But what we would envisage, based on the ratios of recoveries to date, is we would have a very well-weighted rare earth carbonate product that would then be used to be separated into metals. And then those metals, particularly the magnet rare earths, would be going into energy efficient magnets for electric vehicles and wind turbines and submarines, and those components that require very efficient magnets that enable them to operate very effectively.
And from the point of view of the ability outside of, for instance, China, where else can people get these from?
Well, look, if you look at the rare earth market at present, China both dominates mining and also the downstream supply of the magnet rare earths. There is a supply chain developing outside of China. Korea and the likes have started to process and produce these magnets. But what's important, I think, Kevin, from a market's perspective, and we've seen a lot of volatility in these critical mineral commodities, is that you need to be a very low cost producer to be able to withstand the cycles of that commodity volatility. And through in situ recovery, we have an opportunity to produce a very low cost source of these rare earths that we endeavor to demonstrate that cost could be cost competitive with those producers from China. And that's owing to that geology and its amenability to in situ recovery. And the thing is, we're not reinventing the wheel, Kevin. It's been proven in the uranium market over the last 30 years that uranium can be mined through these sandstone-hosted deposits that occur in these paleo systems at scale, at low grade, at very market competitive costs. And what we're talking about is a factor of 10 for the CapEx outlay, and materially lower in terms of ongoing sustaining CapEx and OpEx outcomes. So makes it a very desirable style of mineralization. And what we're hoping to do is emulate that mining setup in the ionic rare earth industry.
Great. So, from the point of view of your potential offtake agreements, I know we're talking a few steps down the line because obviously you've got to prove all this up first, but is it likely that you're going to be heavily in demand, excuse the pun, but heavily in demand for offtakes for this?
Well, look, I think there's certainly a couple of benefits that we we'll certainly have. One being a weighting of heavy rare earths would certainly be very favourable for companies like Iluka that are currently constructing rare earth separation, a rare earth separation plant in Western Australia, and likewise for other companies looking to go downstream in the rare earth separation and processing factors. I think what we do need to understand, though, Kevin, or appreciate, is we need to be prepared to sell product to China and be competitive in that market. In reality, we don't have this separation and processing capacity outside of China at present. And that's where we think we have a market advantage that ISR will enable us to be cost competitive there and still be able to withstand potentially any market volatility.
Very good. So what can we expect from you next? I mean, you said there's lots of news to come out. Well, what is the
process? We already have a number of assays in at the labs from those historic holes. That is testing that scale extent of the model that we've built, and that will really validate the continuity of that mineralization from the existing defined 5 square kilometer footprint. On the back of that, we have samples in at ANSTO where they're undertaking column leach tests under ISR conditions. What that will provide us is the recoveries under those conditions of ISR, and it will enable us to understand the acid consumption under those conditions and equate that to cost parameters for both value of recovery and cost of operation. And those numbers will be very important for us going forward into a pilot study. The other component that we're looking at doing, or we will be doing on the back of that, is developing a flow sheet. So the pregnant liquor solutions will be going to Water Cycle Technologies out of the University of Manchester, and they'll be looking to working to advance a flow sheet to produce that first rare earth carbonate through a process called membrane desorption that's been used in the direct lithium extraction operations that are prominent in South America. And what we hope to be able to achieve there is that product to be produced and to be used to be able to secure those potential future off-takers for this project.
Okay. All sounds very exciting what's going on. And obviously the market has started to realize in terms of the overall situation with the Cobra from a previous podcast that we did, and now you've obviously backed it up with some firm evidence that this is looking extremely likely that it's viable. So yeah, good luck, keep it going. And I mean, the other scenario is that people must understand is you also do have a gold asset as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah, we do. We have a 279,000 ounce resource that's very shallow. And look, we're in a time of record-breaking gold prices in Australia. In terms of Aussie dollars, we're over $3,300 per ounce. So look, it's nice to have in the exposure. World, right? Yeah, correct.
We also saw the news about, the divestment of Prince Alfred as well? That was obviously something that was a non-core asset, wasn't it? So just talk about the rationale. Sure. And that as well.
Well, as any exploration company is, Phil, we're very conscious of being considerate with our money and our finances, and any opportunity we can provide in securing non-diluting capital, we'll certainly look to progress. And that's part of that strategy. Look, whilst copper is obviously of market interest at the moment, we feel like Prince Alfred lacks the scale potential to support a significant discovery, and therefore our focus, attention and finances are better spent advancing the Bull and rare earth discovery.
Very good. And there was also, I believe, news of you had, well, was basically a current director, but was elevated to executive. Was it David Clark? Do you want to just talk us through that and how excited you are for David to become executive?
Absolutely. So David is a legend of South Australian geology. He's had a number of successes to his name. He's certainly been a great mentor to me. And David is currently residing in the UK, and he's currently a major shareholder with a holding of just under 10%. He was the original vendor of the project into Cobra. And he's currently residing in the UK, and he is going to be putting some more focus into marketing this asset and helping us advance it, tell the story, and working it towards a production.
Very good. I think we'll say on that note, Rupert Virko, CEO of Cobra Resources, thanks very much for your time.
No worries. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Kevin. Lovely to speak to you again.
Yeah, good luck. Keep it going, and I'm sure you'll get the results required. And I think the magnitude of this, I don't think people have quite grasped yet, but obviously starting to now. So let's hope that continues.
No worries. Thanks, mate.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.